Hello, everyone, and welcome to episode 7 of season 11 of Movie Round Minute, the daily podcast, where we courier our way through the 2001 award-winning miniseries, The Band of Brothers, 5 minutes at a time. I'm Rob, and joining me once again today are the father-daughter duo of Joe and Cassie Tura, who are avid movie fans and surprisingly also love this series. So welcome back, guys.
Thanks, Rob.
Thank you. Glad to be back.
Yes. Yes. Always fun to have you guys on.
Yes. Ready for more terrible map reading.
Yes.
Well, you know, you can try and find excuses for it. But truth is, there are no excuses. You know, it makes me wonder how we're jumping a little ahead of ourselves, but it makes me wonder how Sobel passed officer's training when he wasn't able to read a map properly. You'd think that they would want to make sure that everyone who's going through that system is able to read maps properly, but I don't know. I guess it goes along with the same joke. You know, what do you call the person who came in last in his medical school class?
Doctor.
That's right. He's still a doctor. So he might have come in last, but.
Yep.
A little bit of an issue, but I guess that's the way it works.
Yep, and Sobel's still a captain.
And Sobel is still a captain, yes. Yes. And Sobel will remain a captain.
Yes,
that's part
there's
of
his it. Punishment, yes.
Well, we get to see later that it really is a punishment for him.
Yep.
You know, we can't easily say, okay, we're gonna let that one slide. No. It's a little bit of a problem. So, yeah. Episode 7 begins with Winters trying to give Sobel some more advice and ends with Sobel narrating an inspiring letter. So we ended things yesterday with Sobel and his men in the middle of the field trying to figure out how to, where they're supposed to be. And Winters comes over to try and help him. And Sobel doesn't really want any help. So Winter says, sit tight. Let the enemy come into our killing zone. They're right out there. Let's get them. And he goes, sir, we have perfect cover here. And Sobel doesn't care. You know, he's the type of guy who doesn't want anyone to tell him what he's doing wrong. Mm. You know, that's what it comes down to. And then
too aggressive.
Yeah, he's very aggressive. Yeah. And then he goes, Lieutenant, deploy your troops. And at this point, Winters realizes he doesn't have a choice. He goes, Second Platoon, move out. And the men will look at him and they're like, what? And they end up starting to walk out into the field like Sobel wants them to do. And, you know, the men are really confused, which one of the things I like about this is they're basically telling us that the men have been trained so well, not necessarily by Sobel from this perspective, but they know that what Sobel's doing is wrong,
mm-hmm.
which says so much about a... You know, the way that a soldier should be looking at their commander, you know, from that perspective. Because you want your soldiers to look up at the commander and be be sure about the fact that whatever they're saying is going to be something that I'm gonna listen to because it's the right thing. But
yeah, I mean, this is somebody you're going to follow into battle, too. So you got to respect him and trust him and, you know that he's doing the right thing.
Correct. And we now know that he's not.
No, not at all.
No.
And the men themselves know it. You see, see, that's one of the things also. It's not like the men are right now in a situation where they're just learning how to do things.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they're a little more advanced in their training and they know right from wrong. And you see, that's a question that if you're in a situation, especially one where it's potentially going to be dealing with life and death and your commander tells you to do something and you're like, wait a second, that's not the right move.
Mm-hmm.
That's going to kill me. You know, at this point, Sobel doesn't really care about that because Sobel believes, and we're going to see this, more as first part of the miniseries is going to show us that Thibault doesn't want anyone else's advice. What he's doing is right. What everyone else is doing is wrong.
Mm.
And you can't tell him otherwise. You know, we'll see what the disciplinary actions, you know, that we've talked about over the last few days and what we're going to see, you know, next week and stuff like that, you know, some of the ways that he tries to discipline are just completely wrong. I guess you can say that's not the way to do it.
Yeah. Yeah.
And that's the way that that he does these things.
No, he's not good on improv. So nope. Yeah.
No, not at all. I don't know, but maybe Ross Geller would be better at, you know.
Ross Geller would probably be worse.
Yeah.
I don't know. That's a good question.
Yeah.
I don't know the answer to that one. I don't know which of them would be worse in doing real improv. Sorry. that's not a clear-cut answer. Not in the least. So then the Sobel starts leading his men through the woods and right into the area where Winters told them not to go. And then we see a whole bunch of soldiers, I guess, from another unit that were all nicely camouflaged. I love how they all have wheat or something on their hats.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
You know, to help them camouflage, to stay camouflaged in all that they're doing here. And basically, they realize that they just come to the wrong place. And then an observer comes over, and Sobel looks like he's in complete shock. He's not aware of the fact that that what he did right now was wrong. You know, he still thinks that he was doing the right thing.
Mm-hmm.
So he's baffled.
Yeah.
How the hell did this happen? I don't know.
Hmm.
What did I do? How did they know where we were going to be? You know, that type of thing.
Yeah, his face to me just says like, oh, cue the sad trombone. There we go. Womp, womp, womp. Yeah.
Yeah. But again, if you're just dealing with training, it's not the biggest deal, except mm-hmm. when you look at it and say, okay, well, this training is going to be, is for life and death situations later on.
Yep.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
So the observer comes over with a clipboard and looks over at Sobel and goes, you've just been killed, along with 95% of your company, your outfit. And he gives him like a grumpy look in a response. He goes, easy company, 2nd Battalion, 506.
Mm.
And he goes, mm-hmm. leave 3 wounded men on the ground and report back to the assembly area. So we'll mumble some just breath. God damn it. And then he turns around and just points at 3 different men and goes, you. Now, I think that the way that they did this is amazing, because what it's showing us right now is not only does Sobel not know how to lead properly in the field, he also doesn't know the men.
Yeah,
you know, he's true. Saying you, and you. One of the things that, I mean, we talked about it yesterday, that, you know, Sink knew the name of the trooper who was coming and bringing him a beer.
Mm.
And, you know, that's something that you think wouldn't be so simple. You know, how is he necessarily supposed to know, you know, that it was Sergeant Grant that was bringing it? But Sobel himself doesn't know who these men are.
Hmm. I wonder if they brought him a beer, if he would know what their names are.
Well, I don't see Sobel drinking beer socially with these men. Not in the least.
I don't think so either.
No, but he looks like he needs it right now.
That's something else.
Yeah. Because he only knows the guys in positions of importance, because that's all that matters to him.
Yeah, I agree. I feel like he probably feels like he doesn't have to know these men, you know?
Well, I'm sure that's what he thinks, for sure. But one of the issues is that, again, he's supposed to be leading these men. So if you're going to be leading them, and you need to be able to, you need to know the strengths and weaknesses of every one of your men.
You would think, but then again, that speaks to his personality. I mean, he leads, he's almost leading through Winters. He's telling Winters what to tell the men to do. And when he finally tells the men, like you said, he has no idea who they are. And just says, you, and just kind of is very almost dismissive. So in his embarrassment.
Right. Again, there's no question about it that he's embarrassed here. You know, that mm-hmm. goes without saying. There's no question about that one.
Mm-hmm.
But just the way that he looks, you know, at these men, you know, it's a subtle reference, but I like the way that they're giving us another level of the issues between Sobel and being a good commander, I guess you could say.
Yeah. I love, like you said, it's super subtle, but says a lot in like 5 seconds. Yeah.
Exactly. I like the way that they do that. And then the shot changes, and we now have we get to see both Nixon and Winters inside of the barracks, you know, trying to figure out what's really going on here. Actually, you know what? I want to go back 1 second and the when in the last scene, not only do we see the embarrassment on the face of Sobel when they all get killed, so we see the dissatisfaction on the face of a number of the soldiers in the company, including Lip, you know, played by Danny Wahlberg. So, you know, it's sort of foreshadowing again how much everyone is frustrated and not happy about everything that's going on right now with Sobel and with the connection to Sobel and stuff like that. So I like the way that they do that. And I think it's done really well.
Yeah, again, subtle, but yeah.
Right. And then we're back in the barracks with both Nixon and Winters. And Nixon says, "Well, what are you going to do?" He goes, "Nothing. Just keep training the men." Now, you know, it's giving us the impression here, and you know, in the book it talks about it more. But at this point, Nixon was given a new job. You know, he became the intelligence officer, so he's no longer there. So he knows to be able to tell Winters, you know, you're on your own here for this whole type of
Yeah.
thing. And as the two of them are talking, we see someone else show up behind them, and that's Lieutenant Welch, who shows up, and he goes, "Am I interrupting?" They go, No. He goes, "Lieutenant Lewis Nixon, Lieutenant Harry Walsh. Just in from the 82nd." And Welch then says to Nixon, "Congratulations on the promotion." He goes, "If you want to call it that." And he goes, "You'll learn him pretty quickly. No flaws, vices, or sense of humor." He goes, "Just like your chums up at battalion staff." He goes, "What's up?" He goes, "Well, I'm hearing a lot of rumblings." And Nixon turns to him and goes, "Doble, we were just talking about that." Walsh goes, "So he gets a little jumpy in the field." And Nixon goes, "He gets jumpy and you get killed." He goes, "Oh, that's nice. Listen, if we discuss it, it should be among yourselves." Absolutely. Now, I love the fact that Winters says this because, again, it shows the integrity of someone like Winters. That is like, you know, we need to keep some sort of distance between us and the men. And if we want to grumble about our commander, we need to do it among ourselves and not show dissent to everyone below us. So I like that. Again, I think one of the beauties of this of the writing of this series is that they had so much to try and encompass together. I think that it wasn't even supposed to be 10 episodes at the beginning. I think it was supposed to be like 13 or 14. And they had to, you know, eventually they cut it down to 10. They had so much so much to talk about in all of these episodes that they had to find ways to subtly do things and by truncating them. And here's just another example of that. You know, just by a line that a character says, someone like Winters, you can learn so much about it, just, you know, about who that man is supposed to be. And I think it's great.
Yeah, really, really well written.
Yeah,
Yeah.
I love that. And you know, as always happens in movies, I doubt this really happened in real life. After Welch says, "Absolutely," who happens to show up at the doorway? The exact person they were talking about, Sobel. Then Sobel, he looks a little suspicious, I guess, with what's going on. He's not really sure. You know, my assumption is that Sobel knew that people were talking about him behind his back. You know, and the question is,
Oh,
did the real
yeah.
Sobel care or not? They make us seem here as if David Schwimmer is playing the character that he does care. You know, that he wants to be a part of things. But from what I remember in the book, he didn't want to be a part of them. He wanted to be, you know, he wanted to train the men the best way. But his method of training them was not necessarily the best way to do it.
Well, I mean, of course, there's a little bit of dramatic
Yeah, of
license. So
course.
yeah.
Of course. And then, so he asks Winters, he goes, second platoon ready? He goes, ready, sir. And get him into formation. We're moving out. And he goes, yes, sir. And, it's funny how he looks over at Nixon and takes another bite of his apple as if he's, saying, this is a guy who's a traitor because he's no longer with us.
Yeah, it's a little awkward too, but
Yeah.
yeah.
It's a little awkward, but, that's, it's, it tells us a lot about the differences between these characters. I like that.
All right, definitely,
And
yeah.
then Sobel just walks away, and then we see all the men getting ready for some sort of leave. They're all in their dress uniforms, getting ready to leave. And then Skip Muck goes, God damn, you gotta admit, he's got no chance. Either the Krauts will get him or one of us. Leib Gott is nearby him, and he goes, who? Sobel? He screwed up one maneuver. And he goes, I'm always fumbling with grenades. It would be easy if one went off by accident. And then Shifty looks at them and goes, they must have put him in charge for a reason. And Leib Gott goes, yeah, because the army wouldn't make a mistake, right, Shifty? So again, it's a small little scene, that takes, was it 20 seconds with this whole conversation between them? But again, it's showing us how the men are so disparaged with the fact that this is the way their commander is acting. And we get a shot again of Lip listening in and hearing this conversation and, taking it in.
Yeah, it's a great look too. It speaks volumes about his character, and you see that as the miniseries goes on, and it really it yeah, Donnie does a great job in this miniseries.
Right. He's the eyes and ears of everything going on, trying to make sure we're, and he's the go-between, I guess, between the officer level and or the command level and the foot soldier level, that type of thing. So it's good the way that, yeah,
So good.
for sure. And then as he's walking away, we then the shot changes and we see someone writing a letter on a train. And as the camera zooms out, we see that it's Winters writing a letter. And Nixon comes up behind him and goes, going my way. He goes, wherever the train takes me. Which is a good answer. And he goes, well, where's that? He goes, I haven't got a clue. He goes, yeah, come on, take a guess. Atlantic, Pacific, Atlantic. He goes, I'm not an intelligence officer. As such, I know, but if I told you, I'd have to kill you. So don't tell me. And Nixon then still wants to tell him, and he goes, New York City, troop ship, England. We're invading Europe, my friend. Fortress Europa. It's great that they referred to it as Fortress Europa at the time. It's an interesting concept to call it that way. Because I guess from an American perspective, especially in the 1940s, Europe is so far away. And what do you learn about history at the time? That there were tons of battles that were going on there between various factions, and most of them were knights and fortresses and all that type of stuff. So it's interesting that they would. I know that there was a game that came out in the 80s called Fortress America.
Computer game, I guess.
No, 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 no. It was a board game. It was like a Risk.
Oh, board game.
It was
Oh,
like Risk.
okay. Didn't have that one.
That's cool.
It was a long game because you had you ever play Axis and Allies? Have you ever heard of that one?
I know I've heard of it, but I have never played.
That Axis and Allies was even longer than Fortress America. Fortress America was that you had to be able to you had like I think four different teams, and you had to like one was
Oh,
trying
boy.
to control fight defend America, and one was trying to take it over. And that's
Oh, that seems long. That's why I never liked Risk. It just took way too long.
right. Well, okay. Risk now has missions and stuff like that, which makes it makes things a little faster.
Okay.
But Risk, I never minded the long play of it, especially when you have five or six players, then it gets a lot more interesting that way.
Yeah.
But you have to have a long afternoon to be able to take care of that. That's true.
Yes. Absolutely,
I mean, like as a kid, I hated Monopoly, but now I understand Monopoly and, don't mind playing it in a faster pace. You know, that type of thing.
Yeah, true.
Right.
It seemed endless as a kid.
Yeah, that's true. So the term Fortress Europe, or Fortress Europa, however you want to think about it, is a historically military term for Nazi-occupied Europe during World War II. And it is also now known as the modern political term for the EU's migration policy.
Huh.
Oh.
Didn't know that.
Okay, so during...
That's interesting.
That's right. During World War II, it was used, first of all, as Nazi propaganda. The Nazis used it to refer to all the areas of Europe that were under its control. And the Allies adopted this term to refer to their own efforts in assaulting the continent. The D-Day invasion itself signaled the beginning of the end for Nazi control over Fortress Europe.
Huh.
So, yeah. The phrase actually has meaning. Yeah, but again, this is also another great subtle scene, which is showing us the mm-hmm. strong friendship and bond between Nixon and Winters.
Yeah.
That Nixon wants to give this information, and who better to talk to than his best friend?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, which is great. And they continue their conversation, and after he mentions Fortress Europa, so Nixon takes out a little flask and offers it to Winters, and Winters says, "Since when do I drink?" I love his response, because he says, "If I thought you'd drink, I wouldn't have offered it to you."
Yeah, I like that a lot too.
Yeah, I mean, that, again, it's the whole thing with sometimes you want to get credit for asking for something even though you don't want it, just so the other person knows that you're doing it. Like if you want to extend an invitation to somebody for something and you really don't want them to do it, but you know that, okay, I'm gonna extend that invitation knowing that the odds are they're gonna say no, and then when they say no, yeah, I get credit for at least asking, that type of thing. It's you have to know who you're asking and what you're asking and stuff like that. So yeah, it fits in well for what Nixon is thinking here. And then Winters says something very interesting to him. He goes, "Nix, what are you gonna do when you get into combat?" Now this question can be interpreted in so many different ways. What do you guys think that he might be referring to here?
I don't know.
I mean, he's the intelligence officer, right? Mm-hmm. So I guess, like,
is that meant to be like more of a behind the scenes kind of position, maybe?
One of the interpretations that I think has to do with the fact that apparently Nixon is always drinking. I mean, they talk about this later in the series about so I have a feeling that he's referring to that. Like, if you're in the middle of combat, right, how are you going to deal with things if you can't drink?
Uh-huh.
Oh. Yeah.
And I think the second question is that he's basically saying that he knows that Nixon has no interest in being a part of combat, which is why he's the intelligence officer. And maybe what he's saying to him is that, what's going to happen if they try to actually move you into a position where you will have to go and fight, where you don't necessarily want to do that.
It's an interesting twist in this conversation, mm-hmm. too.
That's right. And then, because this is sort of what I guess nowadays you would call this an intervention, with the way that he's talking.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And Nixon has a great response, because he says, "Oh, I have every confidence in my scrounging abilities." And then he says, "And I have a case of VAT 69 hidden in your footlocker." And he goes, "Really?" He goes, "Oh, yeah." Again, the way that this conversation is going, it obviously is referring to, how are you going to get booze when we're in the middle of nowhere? And, or at least that's how Nixon is taking the conversation, the question. And he's basically saying, "Well, I got a lot of booze stashed in your food locker," which we'll never know if that's really where he's stashing it or not. But
Henley would be proud. Yeah, Henley would be proud. If that's the truth.
Yes. But no, if Henley knew about it, then Nixon will not have that case of that 69 left in the footlocker.
That's true. It would be gone.
Henley would have already taken it and used it at the same time as he's trying to get von Luger's butter.
Traded for tools, yes.
Maybe. At this point, we see Welsh still sleeping on the train. He wakes up, and then Nixon sees he wakes up. And says, "Morning." and then hands him the flask, where he does take a swig, and then he goes, "This could turn into a really nice trip." So I'm assuming that he doesn't have very much problem with the fact that that he's now going to get a little swig of booze, whether it's morning, afternoon. It's either morning or afternoon at this point because it's still light. My assumption is it's probably not that late in the day, but I could be wrong because he just, I mean, when he's saying good morning, it's the idea that you just woke up. So even if someone takes a nap in the late afternoon, evening, when they wake up, you say good morning because there's no other phrase that really works. You can't say to someone good night after they wake up.
No.
I mean, you can, but they won't necessarily understand what it is.
Say good night before your nap.
Maybe. Depends on what. Well, actually, you do that also. Same thing. You won't say to someone, if you're going to take a nap in the afternoon, you won't say good afternoon and then go. You'd say good night. So that does fit in there from that same perspective. And then the scene changes a little, fade to black, and then we find out that it is now September 6th, 1943, the Brooklyn Naval Shipyard. And, you know, the rest of this segment is basically going to be giving us a voiceover. But one of the great things is first you see how many men are packed into the ship. And they are all wearing life vests. And, you know, we see a shot of a whole bunch of men getting onto the ship. We see a Jeep being hoisted up also. So, I mean, they're bringing everything with them, obviously. You don't have other ways of doing it. And I mean, it's a great shot because
I love that shot.
It gives us a long shot of all of these men walking up the plank to get on this ship. You see cranes in the background and you see a whole bunch of skyscrapers and stuff.
It looks like a matte painting, like a matte shot, but either way it's one of the best shots in like the whole miniseries. I love it. Yeah. And it's like 3 seconds. Right. Yeah. It's really good.
Right. Well, as we mentioned yesterday, the shot with the parachutes that we're going to get in a while from now is so much better. Right? But yeah. This is trying to show us the sheer vast amount of soldiers that are going onto this troop carrier.
Which is crazy. Yeah, it's
completely
crazy.
Nuts. Yeah. Completely nuts. And then we start getting a voiceover from Sobel saying, "Dear sir or madame, soon your son will drop from the sky to engage and defeat the enemy. Your letters of love and encouragement will arm him with a fighting heart." And then he gets cut off as, you know, as we always want to cut off Sobel with whatever he's doing, you know, as this 5-minute segment ends. So is there anything else that either of you wanted to mention?
I love Ron Livingston in this miniseries. I think he's great, but it's so hard. Again, like you equate David Schwimmer with Friends, I equate Ron Livingston with the brilliant comedy Office Space. Because it's so hard to just not think of him in Office Space, for me at least. And I know, Cassie, you probably know him more from what was that show with the guy who died, the two families, the one had the affair. Cassie, what was that show? You and Mom watched it.
What?
Yeah, Ron Livingston, A Million Little Things.
Yes! Oh my God, he is in A Million Little Things.
My wife in the background came through with
that
one.
He's the one who died!
Yes. Especially when after Sobel leaves, after he eats the apple, you see a little smirk from Ron Livingston, and that reminded me of Office Space. But by the time you get to episode 9, there's no thinking of Office Space in this one. But that was all I had. And again, another actor I love in this, Michael Cudlitz, is so great. I like him in everything: Southland, Walking Dead, Superman, and Lois. He's great too. So it's such a great cast. Sure.
I mean, again, we'll talk more about him in a few months from now. Michael Cudlitz has some great scenes here.
Yeah.
Excellent. All right, Cassie, anything else you wanted to mention?
For me, no. I'm good on these 5 minutes.
All right. Excellent. Today, we will be playing a trivia game. We'll be doing World War II trivia.
Okay.
We'll be doing World War II movie trivia. You know, again, I'm not going to be asking you questions about the war itself. I'm going to be asking you questions about movies that take place during the war, because you know, that's what we do here. We talk about movies.
Yes, movies I could get, real history, no chance.
We're the opposite, Dad.
Yes, we are. But I know you'll come through with movies too, so.
Oh, I hope so.
Excellent. What are we going to do? We're going to spin the wheel and see where it goes. And round and round and round the wheel goes. Where it's going to stop. Remember, there's going to be five questions that we're going to be dealing with here.
Okay. Sounds good.
Yay.
In the 1965 film In Harm's Way, starring John Wayne and Kirk Douglas, who played the female lead?
In Harm's Way, huh? That's not blah 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 blah. Let's see. Has she won an Oscar?
No, she did not win an Oscar, but she has been nominated, if I remember correctly.
All right. Wow. I got to be honest. I don't have a clue. See any idea? I'm just going to take a guess.
Oh, my God. Don't even look at me for this one.
All right. Well, you're in another room, so I can't look at you.
Okay. So, first of all, I'm wrong. She was nominated for Best Actress twice, and she won one time.
Oh. Okay.
She won in 1964 for 1963 for the movie Hud.
Patricia Neal.
Very good.
Nice.
Nicely done.
That's not what I would have guessed before that clue. I was going to go Maureen O'Hara, which would have been completely wrong.
Nope. right. And the year that they made the movie, she actually had three aneurysms.
Oh, gosh.
And nearly died that year.
Holy cow.
Oh, my gosh.
That's terrible. Mm-hmm. All right. One down.
Okay. One down. There we go. All right, so let us spin the wheel and see what the next one is that we're going to go. Around and around the wheel goes. Where is it going to stop? And it probably will not be Polish JoJo.
No.
What is the name of the 1981 movie starring Donald Sutherland and Kate Nelligan that is about a German spy?
Cassie, I know this one.
I feel like I've heard of this.
Maybe. Is that Eye of the Needle?
Yes, it is.
Nice, Dad.
That's nice. A Ken Follett book, I believe.
Yes.
Yeah, okay. Yeah. All right. See, I got Indy, our cat, on my lap for moral support. So he whispered the answer to me.
What about me?
So you think you're cheating? Is that what you're telling me?
Well, you know, this cat
you're getting,
knows.
You're getting answers?
This cat knows everything. Yeah.
Indy is like 96 in cat years. So.
Yeah. You know. Yes.
Ah, okay. Fair enough. All right, let's spin the wheel again and see what the next one is. Okay. In the 1959 movie Operation Petticoat.
Ooh.
Okay. Cary Grant and Tony Curtis are forced to get creative with the submarine paint job. What unusual color does the submarine end up?
Okay, Cassie, I'm going to let you tackle this one. I know it, so.
Why? I don't know.
What do you think would be an unusual color to paint a submarine? And keep in mind, it's Operation Petticoat.
Pink?
You're very good.
Yeah.
Ah!
Very good.
Yay! Yo, pink was the first color that came in my head, too. So. Nice.
That is a great color. It's a great movie. It's a lot of fun.
Yeah, it is fun. I haven't seen it in a very long time.
Yeah, I haven't seen it in a while either. All right, let's spin the wheel for your fourth question. See what we get. Okay, the 1953 movie From Here to Eternity ended up winning 8 Oscars. Okay. How many of the cast members were nominated for Oscars? And a bonus is how many of them actually won.
One, two, three,
And it was nominated for 13 Oscars total.
Okay.
1-8 and was nominated for 13.
1-8.
Okay. I want to say cast members nominated. I'm going to say 5.
And you would be correct.
Okay. Wow.
Okay.
And how many of them won, Dad?
I think.
You think it's like one?
I think it might only be one. Frank Sinatra.
Well, Frank Sinatra did win. You're yeah. correct about that. But he's not the only one.
Deborah Carr?
Nope. She was nominated for Best Actress and did not win.
Bert did not win.
And Bert was number 4. That was the other one. That was another one that was nominated. Best Actor did not win.
Best. So it's got to be Best Supporting Actress. Who else was the other supporting actor?
Yeah, I'm going to give you a hint. In season 6, I talked to her daughter. Do you need me to remind you?
No. Hold on. I got it. Wait. Donna Reed.
Excellent. Nicely done. Yes. Donna Reed won.
Best supporting actress. Yeah, you know it. Now I'm seeing her in the movie. Yeah, it took me a while. Again, that's one I haven't seen in a very long time.
Okay. Fair enough.
It's been an eternity since I've seen it. Oh.
Ooh.
Could not resist that. I'm sorry.
Understandable. Yeah. That's fine. So who was the fifth acting nominee that you didn't guess?
You mentioned
Burt Lancaster, Deborah Carr, Frank Sinatra, and Donna Reed.
Ernest Borgnine? No?
Nope.
Should have been.
Nah, you have to wait 2 years for that one.
Oh, wait, From Here Eternity. For Marty, yes. Who's the it's not Montgomery Clift, no.
Yes, okay. It is All Montgomery right. Clift.
Wow, nice, Dad.
Sometimes.
All right, so let's spin the wheel for the final question. Okay. See, you haven't suffered
too much. No, this is good. I'm very happy with my results so far. Sorry, our results.
Yeah, I got one. I got Pete.
I know you did. I'm sorry. And you got Frank Sinatra.
I did?
Yeah, you did. You sent it to me mentally.
Oh, for sure. For sure.
Okay. I guess that's an interesting way to do that.
Yeah, it's that father-daughter telepathy, you know?
Oh, yeah.
Where you're telling him who won an Oscar.
Oh, yeah. Most definitely.
Back in 1953.
Most definitely.
She has beaten me 2 years in a row in our Oscar pool, so, you know.
Okay.
Something to be said for that.
Okay, but, you know. Wait, so you're telling me that she wanted Anora to win?
Yeah. Yes.
Yeah, I'm still trying to figure out what that movie is supposed to be about, but whatever. Okay. What is the best way to ask this question? Okay, what 1962 World War II movie features three 1950s teenage singing idols? Paul Anka,
Fabian, The Longest Day,
and Tommy Sam. Yes, very good.
Nice. Nice.
That is that's great that you knew that.
Well, everybody's in that movie, so yeah.
That's true also. That's true. No, you had to be able to make the connection that it was 1960.
Yeah.
Perfect. Perfect.
Excellent.
Now we will play the daily game of Name That World War II Movie.
Okay.
Yay.
We'll see if the famous Joseph Turra shows up once again. Or the infamous one, because you're the famous one.
Obviously, yes. Especially after people listen to this.
Of course. All right, so let's spin the wheel and see what movie.
All right.
Round and around the wheel we'll go. Okay, this is a movie that came originally came out in 1942, but only became popular in 1943, and it's about a pair of lovers during World War II.
Is it one of those movies with like? No, never mind. That's probably a dumb question.
Is it Mrs. Miniver?
That's not about lovers.
No, is it? But you said 42, 43. That's
is
where I got.
Is this one of those movies with like Audrey Hepburn?
1942, 1942, Parallels. And Mrs. Miniver has nothing. Oh my gosh. Wow, that was a terrible guess. Parallel Relief.
And I know that you've seen this movie.
Is this Casablanca?
Oh,
Yes, it
very
is.
good.
God!
Nice. Good job, Cass.
Oh my God,
Great
that's
guess.
so funny. Oh, I got that and you didn't.
Good job. Nice.
Excellent.
Very good.
Nicely done. All
Oh my God.
right. So, would you like to once again tell people where they can find you guys?
Yeah, so I'm just kind of like on the socials, like Facebook, Instagram, all that type of stuff. And someday I will be on my dad's blog that he's gonna talk about right now.
Yep, that blog is called Von Luger's Butter, and that's at tourfish.wordpress.com. You can find me there. You can find me on old episodes of Marvel University, which is marveluniversity.blogspot.com. Might be some Nick Fury and the Howling Commandos comics for your World War II fans on there, and the socials, and that's about it.
All right, and finding me is very simple. Just do a quick search for Movie Around Midnight. You can find me on Facebook. You can find me on Twitter. You can find me on Instagram. You can find me on my website, moviearoundminute.com. If you want to send me an email, you can send it to moviearoundminute@moviearound.net. So, until tomorrow, curry!
Hurry!